This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Audible, you know, the company known for audiobooks, is going back in time. They're now doing radio plays, or maybe we should call it audio theater. We're going to talk about one of them. It's called Fade, and it's about a novelist from Chicago named Lucia, who moves to Hollywood to become a TV writer. It's her big break, but she has a hard time adjusting, not only because this is her first writer's room, but also because she's Latina. She finds out that she is a diversity hire.
On the first day, one of the other writers, this guy named Gary, who's basically a prevention ad for skin cancer with his fake orange tan, he like corrals me in the kitchen, puts his face real close to mine, and whispers all gross, "You do know you're the diversity hire, right?" And I'm like, "What's that?" He says, "You're only here because you're Hispanic. It's great. You don't have to try too hard."
She's telling that story to her only friend at her new job, and it's the janitor, Abel. Initially, the two clash over class and culture.
"You never had no job before?"
"Not like the kind where you go to an office, no."
"Then how did you..." "Oh, you're married."
"What? No, I'm not married." "Oh, man. Because that's the only way I'd be able to stay home, only if a man kept me? You are Mexican after all, huh?"
"Nah, I just meant
What year is this?"
Joining me now is the writer and director of Fade, Tanya Saracho, best known as the creator of Vida. Welcome back to Press Play, Tanya.
Hi.
It's great to have you. Also joining us is the voice you just heard, one of the stars of Fade, actress Carla Souza. She plays Lucia, and she's best known for her role as Laurel Castillo on the ABC drama How to Get Away with Murder. Hi, Carla.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, too. Okay, Tanya, let's get first the origins of this, because I understand that you actually wrote this as a play that people could see in the real world at first, and then now it's a radio drama of sorts. So describe that transition.
Yes, I wrote this play. It wasn't autobiographical, but it came from an autobiographical source, sort of. Mm-hmm. I was going through my first year of writing for television. This sort of came from that experience. Then it became its own play. I had a first production at Denver Theater Center, and then it played off Broadway. So it's done the rounds around the country. And then Audible had the great idea of making it into, you know, audio theater. And it's been an amazing experience to sort of like distill it to this form, because like the imagination is the other element in it. You know, in the theater, we show you what happens, you know, but here it's like you have to sort of imagine it. And it's been a great exercise.
Right, right. And so you were actually Lucia, you know, in your first job. And did you actually make friends with the office janitor?
You know what? That did happen. I don't want to say it happened exactly like that, but I made friends with two of the janitors, and they were the only people like me, other Latinas, that I would see in the studio. And that struck me. So like that sort of inspired the play, because I was like, what is this TV writing Hollywood thing? You know, I was a playwright in Chicago, so I was coming in cold into this room, and there was a lot of culture clashes and things that I had to get used to. And I didn't know anyone in LA, and because I would stay afterwards to learn the art form, you know, how to write an outline and how to use Final Draft, which is the software that they use. And, you know, so I would just stay till like 11 p.m. and around 6 o'clock, this crew came, you know, and I made friends with a couple of the janitors, and they did help me with a couple of things. I was new to LA. So a lot of that is based on what happened to me.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, too, the culture clash that I alluded to in the intro. It's like a class clash, if you will. And yet here you two are bonding because you're still cast as the other, even though you're in different classes. Carla, I'm wondering if you have had a similar experience in Hollywood.
For sure. I mean, I met Tanya on How to Get Away with Murder. She was a writer. You know, I was definitely a little naive to think that Shondaland represented all of Hollywood. And I basically woke up to the cruel reality of what Hollywood was once I left Shondaland. And I was definitely put up against a lot of stereotypes, whether it's in audition rooms, people asking me to put an accent on, surprised that I have lighter skin or that I have blue eyes. And so I loved that this play, you know, touched upon the colorism within our community that people don't really understand here, because there's only been one sort of way of representing like Latinos in California and in the greater US. And so it was very interesting to me to find someone who'd really represented it in a story that's very contained. It all happens in one office. And so for me, it was like a wonderful exercise of, you know, acting, but also explaining and sort of living out all the stuff that I come up against in my industry constantly.
So talk a little bit more about your character, Lucia. Who is she? And how does she interact with Abel?
Hi, Lucia. Lucia, she's a woman who's very ambitious. She comes to LA. She's very judgmental of the system, you know, thinks that she's more, I guess, dignified than all the other writers in the writer's room, and starts clashing with the ways that they see her as a diversity hire, starts trying to prove them wrong, and then ends up using one of the stories that Abel so bravely and generously shares with her in an intimate moment over some pizza and a beer. And then she ends up using that, as writers do sometimes. I'm always told, don't share everything with writers because they won't put it in their work. They end up putting it in the show. In the end, it's sort of her transformation into these TV execs that she hated at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's sort of her ambition ends up taking her to become one of those people. And so it's very, it's heartbreaking, but it's a really good look at reality in Hollywood, especially.
I know. I found myself really heartbroken because I kind of liked her, even though she's clueless, because she does seem lonely and kind of desperate for this companionship with Abel. And so, Tanya, is that you looking at yourself under the harsh glare of the microscope?
Yes. I would say around the first few pages, it was a little bit more autobiographical. And then when you're able to look at it with actors saying it, you're like, well, what is this play really about? And what am I like, what did I think about those exchanges that I had? And then analyzing, like Carla said, this like how we encase class when we come from Mexico, or we are, you know, third generation Latinas here, like we sort of still mimic and encase the class and color issues that we have in our country. So when other actors are saying those words, and it's not just a page in front of you, I was able to like sort of make it about something bigger. Because the experience is like, yes, somebody did talk to me the first like hour that I showed up in the writer's room and said, you know, you're the diversity hire. That thing that, you know, mm-hmm. played, it happened to me. And I love how Carla does it because he sounds like someone from Slytherin, you know, because he's like, I just like breathe. I'm like, that's what it was like, you know. Anyway, but then it departs. So I do like to be unkind sometimes to my protagonist just to analyze and to, you know, to sort of unpack what it is. So, and you kind of blow it up. Like she does the worst thing she could do, this betrayal. I didn't do that to the two guys. No, but they did help me. And then afterwards, when I left the job and thinking about it, I was like, what was that, Tanya? Like you were just, did you use them? You know, but I have seen this sort of betrayal happen in this Hollywood town. The more I'm in it, I just see how we act as others in this industry to try to survive. And it just, you know, it was more like amplifying that and then it not being specifically about that experience that I had.
Yeah. I mean, you do what you have to survive. And if that means associating with the dominant culture, then I guess that's what it takes if that's what you want.
Yeah, associating and serving whichever way is necessary. So conviction's out the window, you know? So that's sort of what happens to Lucia. I am so glad you said you like her because I obviously love her. and she's complicated, but like, I love that we get to, she is an image of an immigrant. And when you see it, like if you see Carla, you don't think right away, it was like, oh, that's the immigrant story. But she, you know, she is an immigrant story. Also Lucia in this way, we always have this view of what immigrants look like. And I love that she's the immigrant and he's the American, you know, where you might think that he looks like what you think an immigrant looks like. You know?
It's interesting, but he says he's Mexican.
Well, because we're cultural Mexicans. You will ask second, third generation, fourth generation Mexicans, they'll tell you they're cultural Mexicans. It's a thing. We are sometimes born in this country missing the motherland in a way that is irrational to other people, but it's a real thing, you know, this Mexico pride, even though you're born here.
And Carla, where are you from?
I was born in Mexico City, and I came to live here as a kid with my parents when I was, I think, 2 years old. Lived in Colorado for 5 years and went back to Mexico. I became an American citizen because my grandmother from my dad's side had come, and she was the cook to the Rockefellers and the Kennedy family. So she's Chilean. And then she became nationalized. And then because of her, I was able to then become a national, an American citizen. You know, ultimately I came, motherland, I was born in Mexico and I lived mostly in Mexico.
And you were a big star in Mexico. What is it like being here, working here as an actress versus working there?
I'll just give you the most contrasting experiences. So I'd get on the plane to go back to Mexico and they'd make an announcement saying, you know, we'd like to welcome, they'd name one of the characters that I did, like Barbie Noble on the flight. And they all started clapping that I'm on the flight. Or I'd go to a restaurant and I'd have my whole bill paid because people would love my career or the projects that I did, any hotel or trip I would take, you know, the hotel would pay for it, that kind of thing. I'd then land in LA, you know, to do an audition and I'm in the McDonald's bathroom trying to look like, you know, the stereotype of whatever it is, the hoops, the big hair, the sexualized, you know, Latina, speaking like this in English and all like this. And like going to like four auditions in that day and people going like, no way, are you really Mexican? And because I have to speak like this, then they were like, okay, then she's my, you know, she's Latina. And I would, you know, be rejected constantly. Yeah, I'd basically be like in the grind of Hollywood, no one wanting to take a meeting, no one wanting to cast me in anything because I hadn't done anything, quote unquote, in the U.S. So who knows if I could really act or whatever that means. I couldn't get into any restaurant that's like, you know, with status here in Hollywood or whatever, any of the events or any of that stuff, because, you know, who was I? I wouldn't get representation because, you know, back in the day, I was like not famous enough until, you know, I became famous in Mexico and then I got representation here in the U.S. But it was a very different experience landing in Hollywood, being a quote unquote nobody versus, you know, a movie star in Mexico. It was a really good life lesson.
I was starstruck when we worked on How to Get Away with Murder. The first time I was going to meet her, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get to meet her because I was starstruck. And I hope I didn't act too stupid because I was like, hi, you know, like so to me, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go work with royalty. Why isn't everybody making the biggest deal right now? You know?
Oh my gosh. So talk about actually making this, because as you said, this is different than performing it on stage in front of a live audience. It's obviously different from a television show.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's definitely a technique to realize that all you have is your voice. And to me, it was like the purest form. Like Tanya says, you know, when I tell my kids a story at night, like all I have is my voice, you know, after we read the books, right before going to bed, my kids always want like a story that I invent every night. And so it's just all in the voice. And so I feel like it's very, you know, it's very similar to do that in a booth in your pajamas, you know, and just having people nowadays, you know, when they're commuting to work or they're going on a hike or they're in the gym and they just want to hear, you know, a fiction. It's a really engaging medium for your own imagination because you just picture it. I feel like the visuals sometimes trump our imagination. So it was a very, I think we did it in 2 days, right, Tanya? We did it in two days.
Oh, wow. I have to say, I was transported. I was listening in the car and all of a sudden I was in her office in front of her computer, seeing Abel. I was like just there sharing pizza with you guys. And I really did feel like I was in that room with you. It's pretty remarkable what the imagination can do with just a little bit of a, you know, really good prompt.
Agreed. And like we sometimes we don't have to use our imagination. We just receive the information or through visuals when we're watching television or film, you know, which is great. We love that medium. We make a living from that medium. But this was and I kept saying exercise, but it's an exercise in imagination. And it makes it like by the end of it, you think you've seen it. A couple of people have told me, it was like, I thought I saw your play. No, you just heard it, you know, but it, because the imagination is so engaged. I do love this like resurgence of the old school radio play.
And do you act differently, Carla, when you're doing this versus being in front of a camera?
Yeah, I definitely, I think that the, you know, facial expressions and physicality, sometimes perhaps it's too much. It's like a hat on a hat if you're doing the voice and the physicality. So sometimes when you're acting for a camera, you know, your physicality will tell that story and your voice will tell another's to make it like complex and nuanced. Because if not, it becomes soap opera-y. I don't know how to explain it, or like too much, you know. I found that I had to go to more extremes in my voice, you know, to kind of act it out more in my voice so that it could be received in a way that if I did it on TV or on film, it would be maybe a little too much. Like I would definitely do a different performance with my voice if I was doing it for film.
So are you both going to do more of these?
This was a one-off from the play, but I'm dying to do this live with Carla. So we'll see what happens with that.
I started in the theater. I basically did my 3-year BA honors acting degree in London. It's been 10 or so years that I've been on the stage. So our plan, and seeing as Audible now has a theater in New York, our dream and our plan is to play this in New York so that people can go see it in the flesh.
Oh, well, okay.
With this cast. Yeah.
Well, until then, Fade is available on Audible. I've been speaking with the writer, director of it, Tanya Saracho, and the star, Carla Souza. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, the singer and songwriter Irene Cara died over the weekend. She wrote and performed Flashdance and sang Fame. So why wasn't she a bigger star? Well, her lawsuit seeking songwriting royalties may be the reason. That story is next on Press Play.